It's 9:02. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is The Radio Activist. Today, I'm Lisa Loving, introducing new show host, Rochelle Dixon. We're going to chat with her for a little while, and she's going to be here conjunto in Studio 2 with me. And our guest, though, is a very controversial guy. We were already arguing in the lobby and shaking fingers at each other. Jeff Thomas Black. Yes, the guy who stole and burned the Neil Goldschmidt picture from City Hall. We're going to be talking about nonviolent direct action and a little bit more on something else that's happening coming up at City Hall. But I want to just start off just saying to Rochelle, I hope you're going to be a co-host of this show.
Talk about your work.
What do you do when you're not here behind this microphone? Because this is The Radio Activist, and we're always encouraging people to become a volunteer at KBOO. Talk about what do you do when you're not here?
Well, when I'm not here, I do a lot of things, but it's all in the interest of elevating the human condition and civil rights. So I work on food justice activism, which includes the land, the labor, and the people. I also work on disability rights, as well as rights for people of color. And so that keeps me pretty busy because this town right now has a lot of challenges in those areas. So I'm excited about the work that I do.
Wait. Mm-hmm. You don't just do stuff in Portland. I've seen you jutting down to the Capitol in Salem. I've seen you do things around the region. I think that you see connections between Portland and the rest of the state. I mean, can you just talk about that a little? You don't just stay here. I've seen you.
No. There's some work that I do. Some political work that I do that takes me into different spaces. And also there is some work that I do just involving justice that may require that I go down to Salem or submit some information on a bill or testify, and so that sort of thing. It's important as an activist to realize that the whole goal is to change policy and to make sure that folks are accountable for what they're doing, and that means going to Salem sometimes. So.
And if we have time later in the hour, I'd like to ask you about this really interesting press conference you were at a few weeks ago. It doesn't really mesh that well with our topic, though. You're one of those people who's doing stuff, and I just always want to figure out what's going on. So, Rochelle invited Jeff Thomas Black. Rochelle, why did you invite Jeff Thomas Black today?
Because I right now am exploring direct action and nonviolent. Specifically nonviolent direct action for a few reasons. One, I think the city needs a path forward that isn't violent. We have the alt-right marching in the street and we have clashes. That isn't good for our city, but yet people want to respond to some of the negativity that's going around in the city. So I think it's important to develop ways to respond that don't diminish you and allow you to vent about the issue and for other people to get involved. That's nonviolent direct action. There is no other way that doesn't diminish you in the process of trying to respond. And so then I know that Jeff is definitely a nonviolent person, and he's into direct action. And I knew that he had taken this path forward, and it's not without a cost. It's not passivism. It's not turn the other cheek and just ignore it. There is a response, and that response has cost him a lot. So I wanted to speak to him about that, and I'm very fortunate that I'll be studying a little bit more about nonviolent direct action with Dr. James Lawson, but we can talk about that
in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Radio activist, KBOO Community Radio, I'm Lisa Loving, here with Rochelle Dixon. We've got Jeff Thomas Black on tap. He's right here, but I do want to say this because I talk like a press release. I'm very old. I just have all this history. We are often looking at the conflicts at City Hall with the security and the mayor in context of the white supremacists marching in the street. But in my personal opinion, and I, as a journalist, I've covered City Hall for many, many years, this sort of violence started before the current mayor was elected. I feel that in the year 2016 into 2017, we had ice storms, we had terrible weather, and a lot of individual human beings went out into the weather to try to help houseless people. And there were some other things happening at the same time, too. And some of these people came back to City Hall to agitate for social change. And riots started. This happened before the Patriot Prayer started marching in the street. And I just want to set the table for a larger understanding of when we started heckin' rioting at City Hall. I'm going to say it was under Charlie Hales. I don't feel that I saw that under Mayor...
Adams.
Mayor Sam Adams. I don't feel that we saw violent conflicts in the building with Adams. I don't think that we saw people who were literally stalking and harassing members of the city council, which was a big issue that just came up a few weeks ago, right? And I might have a certain attitude about elected officials and how to hold them accountable. But when I'm listening to that city council meeting and Chloe Udaly is weeping and saying that people are threatening her life, that got my attention. So I don't... Now... just one last thing about that. Like historically, Mayor Vera Katz, right? Years ago, the Willamette Week started once a year, just printing death threats that she got, just so that people could understand the kind of hate mail she got.
Oh, yes.
So we know that there's always this, like, we're talking about direct action. What is, you know, what is action? What is not? And there are people, you know, as a parallel, I could say, you know, I'm a journalist. There are people who see, who call themselves, quote, citizen journalists, unquote, who are at City Hall, who are harassing people too. And we could, you know, I could debate that in a different venue. But some of these issues are old. Some of them go, you know, back way, way old. But some of this stuff is new. And now I think we should give it to Jeff Thomas Black. You want to introduce him, Rochelle?
Yes, the one, the only Jeff Thomas Black, who's an activist and a filmmaker. He is making a film. I'm going to let him speak a little bit more on that. Not going to steal your thunder, Jeff.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I want to say, Rochelle, the first thing you said was that the cost to me, and I would actually...
Wait, start saying what you did. We don't... Not okay. Everybody even knows who you
not
are,
everybody
what you
even
did.
Knows.
Well, we want dates and stuff.
Okay. I just want to say that the cost of direct activism is not as much as the gains of direct activism. The community, the support, the friends, the love, the peace that I have found through this... exceed any cost to me personally. So what I did and what I do is support families that are families of victims of police murder. And one of those very special people that continually fights for her family is named Letha Winston. She's the mother of Patrick Kimmons. And in regular visits to City Hall... I went that day to hear Letha Winston for the first time speak to our city council about the Portland Police Bureau murder of her son, Patrick Kimmons. And as usual, you talked about City Hall being somewhat of a police state, and it is. You go in there, it's probably the most overly secured building in the city. You have to get wanded and go through security And then when you go into the council chambers, there's security on every corner. I think it's really more of a state of collective hysteria than it is a real state of danger. And I just have to say, I'd like to see evidence. If Chloe is receiving credible threats, that's something terrible, if anybody else is. But citizen journalists asking questions is not terrorism and it's not threats.
Well, I'm just talking about harassment.
Yeah, harassment. But even harassment may be as, like civil disobedience in the eye of the beholder, right? My question for a politician that doesn't want to hear it could be called what?
Harassment.
Exactly. So this is what we get to is free speech. And so in the name of free speech... One of the things we could also say is that there were pictures on the wall in City Hall.
Because we're going back to what happened.
Right. Yeah. We're going back to what happened.
Let's loop back to what happened that day. Mm-hmm. And then let's talk about harassment, because I have something to say on that, because I've been a victim of harassment for being an activist. And I know that there's a difference between questioning me and challenging me on my ideas and then threatening me.
Right.
So let's go back to that day.
It's not that gray an area, honestly.
It really isn't. It really isn't. But we've seen our mayor. I've seen many politicians call interesting words, a threat. And so I think that we just have to make sure that when we call something a threat, as you said, I don't think it's a gray area. Threats are threats, mm-hmm. questions are questions, and yeah. let's not confuse the two.
Yep, definitely. So go back to yeah. what happened that day when you were at City Hall and you were there with to support Letha.
So watching Letha and watching my friend Donna Hayes, grandmother of Qantas Hayes, Moose Hayes, who's the subject of the documentary film that is in production right now, watching them speak to city council and speak directly, really she was addressing the mayor, Ted Wheeler, directly by name, and really talking to him about what happened to her son and pleading for change, that the training and that the preparation and that the procedures failed her family, failed her son, failed the city. And that she is left with a grief like other family members of victims of state murder that will never go away. She's going to be searching for justice and peace for the rest of her life, and I know for a fact she'll never find it.
I don't know if you can speak for her, but why don't we go back to what happened on that
sure.
day?
Sure. So in watching that, she finished speaking, and there was a pretty light continuing agenda, and I had made plans to address that Neil Goldschmidt photo on that day. My plan was to go to the office to take it down and to destroy it in an act of civil disobedience, and then to wait there for the consequences for the police to come and to do that. Now, because of G4S, because they're obsessed with limiting the public's free speech in the council chambers.
Can you back up and explain what G4S is?
Yeah, G4S is a global security firm that runs concentration camps, that does all kinds of heinous civil rights abuses around the world, human rights abuses out of the world. They're owned out of the UK. It's not a US corporation. And they have been hired for the last 5 years to lock down City Hall and keep the people out and keep free speech down. And as you said, this started to happen under Sam Adams, but it really took off under Charlie Hales. And now Ted has them on high alert. I would say City Hall is on lockdown most of the time. Hmm. When you go there, it's a state of hysteria. They lock offices. They're afraid of activists.
I have to say, I do think that's potentially an exaggeration, that they're in a state of lockdown all the time. But the security is heightened. And
I've been kicked out of City Hall for just being there, for trying to open a door that they didn't want
to
open.
Yeah, but look at you. You still haven't even said what you did.
But I'm not a scary guy. Yeah.
He's getting around to it.
Scary is in the eye of the beholder, too. But yeah, go ahead.
So you were, okay. you so made that decision.
I made that
an
decision.
An act of civil disobedience.
And I had written about it for a number of weeks. I'd been in Ted's office. I was actually just dumbfounded when I saw it, because I grew up in Oregon and I knew who Neil Goldschmidt was and what this man did. And I was there visiting Ted's office for civil rights purposes and city purposes. And when you sit down in the chairs in that lobby, the first photo that you stare at directly across from your eye line is Neil Goldschmidt. And I grew up here and I went, whoa, 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 whoa. Are you kidding me? A guy that hired a single mother.
And trigger warning, by the way. Go
trigger
ahead.
Trigger warning. He hired a single mother into his mayoral office in City Hall and proceeded to begin raping her 13-year-old daughter, who went to St. Mary's Catholic School right downtown there, and continued to rape and molest her for her entire life until she died slightly before 50.
Well, wait, no. He didn't rape and molest her when she was 40 and 30 and 50.
They did continue a sick relationship.
But not for her entire life, but for a lot of it.
Yeah, for a long time. And she also, unfortunately for us, was paid $350,000 for her silence. So we really don't have all of the stories that we would like to have. So again, we have a rich man who raped a child and is now, from what I hear, living in France. There was a statute of limitations, believe it or not, for raping a 13-year-old child, and he had gotten out of that. Can you explain that to me?
I can't explain that.
Policy.
That is definitely something that I would like to see change, that we don't have statute of limitations around some of these things. I think it might have been based on evidence or the idea that the longer you go in time, the less reliable information is. But I think that's something that still needs to be addressed.
Jeff Black, what'd you do?
I walked into the office just to kind of get a lay of the land, and it hit me immediately that every single person in City Hall must be down in the council chambers because there was nobody there. And it just was a split-second decision of, hey, instead of taking this down and destroying it here, I could take it down out of and just take it down and figure out what to do, figure out... And again, as an act of civil disobedience, why would one do civil disobedience? It is designed to poke and to get a reaction from people that do not give reactions. And City Hall has kind of specialized in keeping the public's protests against police murder and houselessness and civil rights and freedom of speech and street protests and police actions. They've kept all of that under wraps through their security policies and through everything else. So by civil disobedience, what I was able to do was to draw Ted out, draw the media out, and it's allowed me to bring a conversation of the victims of City Hall, whether it be police murder, whether it be child rape, whether it be false allegations against activists, whether it be G4S attacking and molesting people within City Hall. And it's important to know that the leader of G4S was actually a disgraced Portland cop who threatened to kill her husband and slash his tires. And that is who secures G4S for Ted Wheeler. And that's
so just to jump to the end, you took the thing down and burned it. Did you burn his picture in the office or outside the office?
No. I kept it for almost 2 weeks. And waited to hear whatever type of comment or any type of questions, and City Hall failed to address any of it.
Did you get a call? Did anyone call you and ask you to bring it back?
Did you notify them?
Oh, yeah. I did this all publicly. This was all live on the air. This was all publicly. And so without a response, and I had made the decision from the start that this was not going to go back, because Ted was even making comments of, we're not sure. Or the mayor's office spokesperson was saying, we're not sure. We may put it back up. And I thought, really? You might put it back up. And so I called my close friend, Donna Hayes, and some other folks, and I said, let's do a ceremony on behalf of the victims. Let's talk about why this came down, why it needs to go, and why we're doing this. And that finally got the reaction from City Hall that I was looking for, which were the police showed up, they arrested me, and they gave me 2 years, 4 months worth of charges.
That was kind of an interesting situation, because Jeff had actually agreed to turn himself in and at a designated spot and designated time. So they showed up two hours early?
Hour and a half early. They showed up
at his house when he was in the shower.
Who's they?
The police.
The Portland police in mass with, according to... my housemates, guns drawn, came en masse and arrested me at 9 a.m. while I was naked in the shower, instead of meeting me at 10:30 to turn myself in, as they said. And their statement was, sorry, this is just how we do things. And I said, I know, you're professional liars.
I want to stop and say, we're taking your calls. You're listening to The Radio Activist. I'm Lisa. I'm here with Rochelle. Our guest is Jeff Thomas Black. The number to call, 503-231-8187. This is my question. There's a difference between lashing out as an individual and organizing with a group. And to me, I feel like what I hear you saying is you sort of lashed out as an individual in the moment. Did you have the permission of the families of the police murder, the families of people whose family members have been murdered by the police? Like, did you talk to them before you did that, or no?
Many or most of my friends and close associates knew that I had plans to do this. To take it and to destroy it, yes.
Okay. But what I heard you say, though, is that you sort of decided in the moment to do that.
Well, I decided in the moment to remove it from City Hall as opposed to destroy it there, because the opportunity was just too good to walk right out the door. And it was such a split-second decision. And in fact, my thinking was... their wackiness and over-policing is so much, I was concerned of taking the glass out of the photo so that if I destroyed it, they wouldn't accuse me of having a deadly weapon with broken glass or something like that. So I was actually really kind of trying to analyze it. When I took it down, I thought, wow, if I can just get this out of here, it's going to be much safer than me destroying it right here and trying to face police in City Hall. And I got to tell you, I'm a writer. I write civil rights every single day. I write satire, and humor keeps me alive. And gosh darn it, it was funny. It was just funny because I honestly thought I was going to jail. So, you know, if people see me laughing, it wasn't designed to be a funny action, but it was simply funny because it was an absurd situation. And no, I didn't ask permission. Asking permission is not...
I didn't ask you if you asked permission. Right. I said, did you coordinate with the people that you say you're representing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I do also want to say again, the number to call, 503-231-8187. This happened about a month or 6 weeks ago, right?
I think it's probably about closer to four now.
4 months ago?
No, 3 or 4 weeks.
Three or 4 weeks ago. If you're listening right now, just for a reality check, the Oregon State Capitol removed its Goldschmidt portrait in the year 2011. Mm. So here we are in Portland. We still had Goldschmidt's portrait up there years later. And also for the record, there is a very famous photograph of the Klan. I feel that it was taken in the mayor's office in the 1920s, 1930s. Anybody remember this photo? 503-231-8187. I'm not quibbling at all about, the kind of things that we have in City Hall, the photos up there, what's represented, what's not represented. Do we have a caller? Oliver's on line one. What's on your mind, Oliver?
Hey, I just wanted to chime in. Thank you so much for doing the interview. This is exactly the kind of independent journalism that I want to hear and Portland needs. Bravo. The one thing that I wanted to say, and I saw the video of Black. I think we used to be friends with social media. I'm friends with Donna Hayes. But I saw the video, and I thought, wow. You know, the thing that's being left out of the conversation, in my opinion, I'm old school Portland here, too, is that Bernie Gusto, the driver, this was the guy that was promoted into and became sheriff. And, you know, Bernie's being left out of the conversation, in my opinion. Yeah, let's call out Goldschmidt. Let's call out the corruption. But how about looking at the deeper law enforcement corruption and embedding of way that this works in the bowels of the police departments and the sheriff departments that promotes the driver into a role of sheriff? I mean, I think the sheriff, some of the workers were calling Gusto's code name was Porno Pants.
Yeah.
Something like this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it just tells you that, you know, kind of the level of that. The one thing about Black is if I've got the right person, so I lost some respect for him at the Occupy ICE. Now, if I've got the wrong person, then that's that. But it appeared that Black was critical of Antifa and was almost buddied up with what looked like Patriot Prayer embedding into Occupy ICE at McAdam with some of these other rogue right-winger cop watchers, which I do not like. If that's the same character, then I'd like to ask a question. If what you did is, how is that different than what Antifa perceives as doing justice and democracy, with taking the law into their own hands to make a statement? Anyway,
thank you, Oliver.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And the number to call is 503-231-8187. I think Rochelle wants to say something about that.
I definitely do. I kind of hear this a lot because Jeff and I are of the same mind. We're against all violence. And so that's problematic when people are defending themselves. It can look like you're saying, well, it's okay for these people to assault these people. We're saying it's not okay for anybody to assault anybody. And that's a little different. So that's a challenge with him being a white male, that oftentimes that this kind of thing gets stated, and it gets that he's confused with the other side. He's definitely not on the other side. He is a person that respects the rule of law, but civil disobedience is the way forward. It's a moral way forward, and he just doesn't believe in violence. I'm going to let him answer the question on that specific incident because I'm not familiar with that, but I know these claims. I've heard these claims before about Jeff and about other activists.
Yeah, right. That's a great call, and I really appreciate the question. I really think that the two sides at this point, and it probably points to the value of this very show, is that one side is politics, and politics is a game where we use lies and votes and people and money, and the other side is civil rights and human rights. And as Rochelle said, my sole focus is civil rights and human rights, and whether people agree with my actions or not is completely immaterial. I do not do things to have an audience approve. I don't join other groups or gangs. I'm a civil rights writer, and I'm independent by design because my freedom of speech and my freedom of action in this day when we have so little movement in places like City Hall, so little movement in places like Oregon, where we're putting our foster children in institutions that are penal institutions, where we're failing our school children, where we're having state rape happen in our Multnomah County jail and in City Hall. And as we said, the last caller said, Bernie Giusto, this did not happen in a vacuum. When Neil Goldschmidt was the perpetrator against Elizabeth Lynn Dunham, other people knew, other adults knew, nobody protected her. And the thing that hurt me as a father, and I'm a father of two, was that Ted Wheeler is a father. Other people in City Hall are parents. How could they walk into the public lobby of the mayor's office and continually look at this photo and look away? And I have a question for you. Here's a little trivia. This will be fun. What was Ted Wheeler's job and where was he when the Neil Goldschmidt photos came down from the state capitol? Where was Ted Wheeler and what was his job?
He must have been the treasurer. He must have been the state treasurer.
You got it. He was the state treasurer in the Capitol. He had assumed the last 2 years of the state treasurer before he was reelected for four. So he was there when Neil Goldschmidt came down. And my question for Ted, I wish Ted would call in, is what is he thinking? What did he think when that came down? What were his feelings? And did that impact him? It was in the news. I mean, I saw the stories of that. They had a big, big color photo of Neil because he was governor of our state as well, right? I mean, and then he went on to be Secretary of Transportation under Carter. This was a man who was looked at as potentially Oregon's first president of the United States. He was a star.
Right, but we're talking about nonviolent civil disobedience right now, actually.
Right.
So I'm just saying, I'd rather look at what are valid political tactics than to continue to beat that guy that we all know is the bad guy, the worst bad guy. Well, no, maybe not even the worst bad guy, because there was another guy named Harvey Scott who was very bad about 150 years ago. But I'm just saying, if we could bring the conversation back
around,
start talking about civil disobedience, because I think that's what's... And one of the interesting things is, I mean, my old friend who was with the All African People's Revolutionary Party, she had very super specific ideas about social change and how it happens. And she would always say, if you're not organizing with someone else, if you're only participating on your own, you're not organizing. Mm. And you're just chucking gravel against the side of the barn. And I have to ask you that. Like, you know, on one hand, you acted surprised that the cops came and knocked you out of the shower or whatever. But if you organize with other people, you would have expected that. I'm being real with you.
I wasn't surprised, and I did expect it. And I do. I guess that working with other people, I work with everyone. I walk the streets. I talk to houseless people. I talk to people that
but
watch.
You don't coordinate what you're doing. You don't have a group that says, we're going to do this.
No, I don't. I'm not comfortable with any of the groups that they're showing the type of leadership. And let's talk about...
Well, the concept would be starting your own group, right? Wouldn't you be creating your own organization and building community around it?
That's possible, except that's not who I want to be in this world now. I'm a writer. I'm making civil rights documentaries. I was a business leader, and I don't want power and control of organizations and people. That's just not what I want to do with my life. And so while what you're saying is probably reasonable, that's not my path. And to address ICE, because I think that was a really great question, what happened at ICE, and Rochelle really hit it, is that I don't support any gangs. Antifa is an organization that's philosophy is that violence is the correct response to fascism.
I actually, okay.
Okay.
The word organization, I'm going to quibble with that.
Right.
But go
okay.
ahead.
But it, okay, so you're right. It is a, what can we call it? What should we call it other than organization?
Community of affinity.
Okay, so a community of affinity that espouses violence as an appropriate reaction to fascism. And we've seen that play out on the streets. I've been there. I've been in the middle. I've watched it. I've seen the cops shoot at me when the fascists are misbehaving. I've seen the type of brutality that happens. And the problem is that random people get attacked. It is not fascist that it gets attacked. It is not anti-fascist that gets attacked. It's all kinds of people that are getting brutalized. And so this violence doesn't benefit anybody. It's not bringing any type of political movement forward. It's just causing chaos in our streets. And when
last I checked, though, there was a class action lawsuit around that. That is looking at police violence against the leftists.
Absolutely.
So lawsuits actually do cause social change. So I actually have to look at you and quibble with that a little bit and say the number to call is 503-231-8187.
I'm all for suing the city.
Right on.
I, in fact, was behind bringing Andrew Stroth to this city to sue the city on behalf of John Elifritz and other people from Chicago because we have to make them pay. For police murder. We have to make them pay for police brutality. That's the language that they speak, is that language of money. And so what happened at ICE is I said, the focus is being lost on the children. Neighbors are being threatened. Businesses are closing. There's violence down there. I am going to come and I'm going to do an act of civil disobedience, block the driveway at ICE and get arrested. And I was told with death threats, and other things that I and any other community members that showed up were not welcome to do that because we had not asked proper permission from the different gangs.
Told by who?
Let's see. I got a threat of physical violence first from Luis Marquez, who's one of the people that leads people down there. And then I got some others, baseball bats to the knees, you won't do this, whatever. And I said, I don't know who you are, but I can assure you that my act of civil disobedience will not be stopped by your threats. And so I was joined by two other community members, one of them my very close friend, Ann Verhoeven, who has terminal cancer and is a hero to me. And we stood and we blocked ICE and we got arrested. While unbelievably, people that espouse to be advocates for civil rights screamed epithets at us because we didn't have their permission. So while this caller might have lost some respect, I think that he didn't necessarily get the story of who was protesting for the children and who was protesting in the name of violence and control. And I guess that's where civil disobedience really comes in, is that it is an act that forces the people in power to react. So let's talk about the lunch counter, right? Somebody sat at a lunch counter back in the civil rights days. And they sat down knowing that they were going to get a club to the back of the head and they were going to get arrested and dragged out with a bleeding head. So the question is, they knew they were breaking the law. They knew the police were going to come. So the question for me is, whose grandchildren are going to be embarrassed? The people who were getting clubbed or the people doing the clubbing? And that's what civil rights is about. I'm not afraid of the consequences for doing what I do because I believe in it. And I believe in what it brings to my family in the future. And if I have to have consequences, that's okay. I'm willing to face those because there's only one reason the three of us are sitting here today. And it's because I did this, air quotes, crazy thing to take down a photo of a child rapist and burn it. So was it crazy or was it strategic? I'm gonna argue strategic, but you guys can say crazy if you want. It doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to note that while Jeff does work independently, he is affiliated with groups that work with the families of victims of state murder, if you want to call it that, or police brutality. So he's been working with that. How many years?
That's been about a year and a half, but I've been working. Yeah. I've been a civil rights writer and writing on civil rights for probably 10 years now.
And so most of the folks that have had a loved one killed by the police, Portland police, he knows. And so there's a group that gets together, and he's affiliated with that group.
The group is called?
That's the Pacific Northwest Family Circle, but I actually work just directly with families one-on-one, too. I work with the family of Andre Gladden, the family of Moose Hayes, with Barb Elifritz, the widow of
John
Elifritz.
What exactly do you do?
Anything and everything. Take them out to lunch, talk to them, find them legal support, help them understand what's going on with the police, with legal cases, with media. Virtually anything they ask me to do. I mean, I consider them to be my family, and literally anything that those folks ask me to do, I do, and it's just my personal mission. I don't take any money for my civil rights work from anyone ever.
And the interesting thing is, through Jeff, I met these individuals, and I've had a chance to elevate the voices of some of these individuals. So I'm very happy that we have this connection to be able to elevate the voices. And I appreciate that Jeff puts his body on the line when the mothers are just too broken to put their bodies on the line. They have work and other children that they need to support, and they can't be down at City Hall. And so I just want to speak to that when folks see a white male at City Hall and they say, well, where are the families? Sometimes the families have been there and they're just too broken to go one more time. Sometimes they need to work. So I appreciate him standing in the gap when they just can't do it any longer. And it's a tough thing to have to relive your child's murder again and again and again. Christopher, how do you pronounce his last name?
Kalonji.
Kalonji, I want to get that right. Just a terrible story out in Clackamas County. No one was being harmed. The boy is gone. His mother is still here, and she's still dealing with that damage day after day. And just having to repeat those stories is very traumatizing. So I appreciate that Jeff can go out and do this work and save some of the harm that comes to the family of having to retell the story over and over again. When I went to Don't Shoot Portland to listen to one particular story, I was crying 15 minutes into it. Mm. I was just so upset. Not only had this child been taken away, but then I had to listen to how the police processed this crime afterwards, and it was just as much of victimizing the families as the original crime. Very, very sad.
That's such an important point, is that the victimization doesn't end, and that's back to City Hall, is that City Hall will spend unlimited amount on attorneys to keep victims of City Hall from receiving any type of justice or monetary justice. And so every time the police shootings are considered to be justified by this rigged grand jury system and qualified immunity that literally gives them the right to kill us. And so the public then gets from our police department and our police commissioner's office that these were justified shootings and everything's okay again, and we smear the dead person as a criminal, when in fact, by definition, they were innocent when they were gunned down. They never got to go to court. They never got to see their day in court and find out if justice was available to them.
You know, it just so happens that today that the mayor in City Hall would declare Reverend Dr. James Lawson Day. And so Dr. Lawson was the architect of the lunch counter protest, and he went to jail for this. So he'll be there at 2 p.m. today at City Hall if anyone wants to join in. It's just coincidental that we're here to talk about civil disobedience. And I'm very proud to tell you that I'll be taking some training with Dr. Lawson starting today in the next 4 days. So I'm really excited about getting more into forming the beloved community, which is what happens after civil disobedience. And the point of civil disobedience is to do no harm.
Right.
And to do the least harm that is possible. It's sometimes possible to not do any harm, right? But the way we go forward is to have clean hands. And so if we're going to talk about something or disrupt something that's happening that's harmful, we want to make sure that we're not doing more harm than the original problem. And so if we're going to live in community afterwards, how are we going to do that if we've attacked the people? We're not going to have that moral standing. A good example of that, unfortunately, is Rwanda. There was a lot of reconciliation that went on to get to the point where they are memorializing what happened 20 years later and still living next door to the neighbors that were part, took part of that brutality. Man, I don't know if I'll ever get to that point. I'm taking baby steps. It is very hard not to want to lash out. Mm. As an advocate for certain communities, I've definitely had people harass me. I think there's a huge difference between harassment and challenging. I think the first time you ask me a question, it's just a question. The second time you ask me a question, well, I'm getting a little annoyed, but it's still just a question. After that, we're getting into harassment. If I've given you an answer and the answer just doesn't suit you, well. But you don't have the right to, you know, pepper me with 5,000 texts or pepper me with 5,000 calls or anything like that. That's harassment. And I do see that we have upped that amount of venom when we are discussing things. And I would just like to take it down. I'd like to take it down a lot so that no one feels threatened just by simply being an activist or political leader. I feel so sorry for the political leaders. I know they are getting threats. I'm getting threats. So it's sad.
I want to say you're listening to The Radio Activist. I'm Lisa here with Rochelle. We're talking with Jeff. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We've been trying to talk about civil disobedience. I'm all cranky. I'm all like challenging Jeff. Mm-hmm. I'm not completely down with you, Jeff. I mean, that's I have cool. issues there, but we don't have to agree. But and also this thing about who are the quote citizen journalists unquote at City Hall. I mean, the point of journalism is an information transferal. It's an information factory. It's not a baseball bat. I'm just saying that as a journalist, and I don't see a lot of useful information that comes out of the dudes at City Hall that are waving cameras and phones around. And also there's an intention, there's tone, there's a lack of fact checking. Hello is a thing. And, you know, opinion and attitude is not information. And I just had to come out and say that. 503-231-8187. Go ahead.
I love it. Let's unpack a lot of stuff there. So first of all, back to what Rochelle said, part of civil disobedience by definition is at least breaking norms, if not breaking laws. Okay. And so getting
challenging unjust laws.
Right. So getting arrested, put in jail, and or potentially hurt are all consequences of civil disobedience, making it a very unpopular thing to do personally, while it's sometimes kind of cool to watch from a distance. But if we look in history, where did we get results from Gandhi, if you've watched that wonderful movie? Where did they get results? They got results when they were relentless, and they took the beating, and they walked up and they took the beating, and they walked up and they took the beating. These amazing people at the lunch counter during the civil rights movement sat down at the lunch counter that was for whites only, knowing that the police were going to come and not just arrest them, but they were going to get punched in the back of the head. They were going to get billy clubs to the back of the head. They were going to get their arms broken. And they sat there and they did it. Right. And so I don't have that much courage. I mean, I stood in front of ICE and I got arrested. I went to City Hall and I broke laws and I got arrested for that. And I did that, and I think it's had the impact that I want because we're having this conversation. But let's remember all those that came before us that really paid that price, in blood in their life. And now I want to throw to you, Lisa, just at City Hall. City Hall creates victims. City Hall accuses activists of false crimes. City Hall frames people. The Portland police frame people. And so these activists that we're saying are uncivil or asking unfair questions, the question that I would ask back to you is, who are they? What has the city done to them? And are they fighting for justice, or are they hurting someone's feelings? Because in my opinion, knowing most of those people there that are known as rabble rousers, each of them individually has been persecuted unfairly by the city and charged with false crimes. So what we have is we have a standoff. And I actually talked to the head of security, Dorothy Elmore, about this personally. We sat and talked for over an hour about the fact that I believe that G4S are the perpetrators, and that the reactions from the activists to G4S's police state and to locking the doors and to putting hands on people and to rushing people if they go 30 seconds over their 3-minute testimony time, these are absurd things. So I'm gonna push back on you and say, I don't think aggressive activists looking for justice are the problem. I think we've got a standoff right now, and I think City Hall needs a moat around it because G4S is locking it down. And that's, again, back to why did I do what I did? I did it because City Hall has to be broken down. This is a cabal. It's a bunch of criminals. They are corrupt. Ted's corrupt. We have a bad police commissioner that's not qualified. We have all kinds of things that are a problem here. And so we got to poke them and draw them out into being accountable for the murders, for the death, for the rapes, for the things that are happening from City Hall.
I said journalists, you said activists. It's not the same thing. You also mentioned Dorothy Elmore, Sergeant Dorothy. Dorothy Elmore is a pillar of the African-American community. If you don't know that.
She threatened to kill her husband, Vince Elmore, and slash his tires. Is she stable?
Yeah.
Okay, really?
I'm looking at you. Yeah.
Really? I would not trust her. Somebody that threatened to kill their husband is not going to be my friend. And she's a cop. She was a cop. And
yeah,
cops are professional liars. That's what they do.
I'm going to put this out.
Okay.
I think you talk in a circle, and I think you misrepresent things. I think that you...
Ooh, we need more time then.
Right. Well, we've got 13 minutes left on this show. And I just feel as if you deflect some of these issues. You consistently, the fact that you're on the show, you keep saying, you know, it must have worked because we're talking about this now on the show. Well, this is the radio activist. We were going to be interviewing activists anyway. It could be you. It could be somebody else. It will be awesome people in the future because the point of this show is to connect people to organizations so that they can make social change. That's the actual purpose of the show.
Right.
And this is a fascinating conversation because we are direct actioning at each other right now.
Right.
We are going at it. And that doesn't actually happen very often on this show. We're often just trying to get information about an issue. And I think that demonizing Dorothy Elmore is a dead end. I think
it's not
that,
demonizing. She has a job to do.
Wait a minute.
No. She is the head of G4S Security for City Hall. Her record is material. Her record as a police chief, and she was, as an assistant chief, she was accused, if you look at her record, of being a terrible boss, of being abusive to her employees. She threatened to kill her husband, and she slashed his tires. So if you want to argue that that's a person that should be trusted to secure City Hall, I'm going to argue that you're wrong.
I'm just going to say that the stereotype of the angry black woman...
It's not a stereotype.
Yes,
it's facts.
I don't care
what color she is. Her color is immaterial.
Wow, this is exciting, Rochelle.
She threatened to kill somebody.
I'm trying to jump in here. I just want to say that I don't know all the story about Miss Elmore. I do know that the Portland police have had decades long of abusing their power. So I'm challenged with that. But I'm also challenged about not calling people out personally when we have a systemic problem. So our problems didn't start with Ted. They didn't start with Charlie Hill. Even though those folks may not be disrupting the problem, they certainly didn't cause it. For 40 or 50 years, we've been dealing with systemic racism that has caused people to die in the streets. I remember when we had the skinheads in the 1980s. We had a mulatta Sarah guy.
Mulugeta Sarah.
Mulugeta Sarah, thank you for chiming in there. Beat in the street. This is not new.
No.
It's just that we haven't dealt with it. So unfortunately, calling out any one police officer or any one leader doesn't cut it for me because we've been going through this for so long. My thing is, when are we going to stop? When are we going to address it and say, this isn't a Ted problem? This isn't a Chief Outlaw problem. Chief Outlaw's been here, 1 year and 3 months? And people want to reverse 100 years of systemic racism and police brutality. She doesn't have a magic wand. So we're going to have to do this together. And that's what civil disobedience is about. It's about the unity, the bonds of showing people the moral high ground. It's not going to work if we get out in the street and just start duking it out. Some of us don't even have the ability, the privilege of duking it out. It's not going to happen. So what we need is to have conversations. What we need to do is spark conversations. I am proud that people like Jeff put their bodies on the line and take things like that picture to have this conversation. Me, I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to go to jail. I don't.
It's not
fun. So I don't see that it's either or. I see it's and. So I'll do my part, and I'll try and bail people out of jail. I'll try and support people who go to jail. I know that Jeff has an arraignment coming up on the 3rd.
Yeah, May trial 3rd, readiness is what they call that.
And I'm really fearful for him because it's that he's up for 2 years and 3 months for that picture.
And that's a good thing.
Hey, we have a caller. Did we say Joseph?
Yes.
What's going on, Joseph?
I'm Joseph. Yes, my name is Joseph. I've been a member since 2002. I just came into the program at the part where the gentleman was talking about a female sergeant or something.
She was an assistant chief, actually.
Threats against the husband. And what I have to say, I don't know the female that's talking to him, but I'm a little... I'm dismayed at the fact that people in power, when they do things like this, how can we deflect this? I don't know how you can discount somebody who's threatened to kill somebody. I'm just blown away by this. What happens is we get people in power like this, and it doesn't matter what color they are. If they do things like this, they have to be held accountable. And so far, I'm not that impressed with Daniel Outlaw. I was because, oh, great, here comes somebody of color, a female, but she's just institutional. She just becomes one of them, and so far I'm not impressed.
All right, we lost that guy. Joseph, is there another caller? Nicole's on the line. What's going on with you, Nicole?
Hi there. I just wanted to respond to the question of holding those individuals accountable and whether the problem is systemic. And clearly it's systemic, but I work in the justice system. If we don't hold individual people accountable for their actions and for the way that they handle their power, then we never can address the systemic issues. If we excuse everybody's behavior by just saying, okay, well, you know, it's systemic, and we have this one person in power that might be, you know, just towing the line, but it's not their fault because they're towing the line. Well, that's why we have this thin blue line, and that's why we have police departments who cover each other's actions constantly, because that's what everybody says that they need to do. They all go along with it, and there may be a few really bad apples, but the ones that go along with it, they go along with it. When you call them out individually in front of the public, that, and then they can deal with it.
All right. Thanks, Nicole.
So, comment. Yeah.
All right, and it is 5 minutes before the end of this show. I'm gonna give it back to Rochelle.
Okay, so Jeff, we have 5 minutes left, and I know that you took that picture and you were trying to advocate for families of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to know what you think that folks who are listening can do so that they can advocate for families who are victims of violence. What kind of things would you suggest?
That's really the only question that we have here. And let's even jump back to, we used a social affinity group called Antifa. We talked about the name Patriot Prayer. We're talking about political officials. We're talking about all these different organizations. And the thing that's terrifying to me, I guess I would have called myself probably a peace advocate a number of years ago instead of a civil rights advocate, but I think people have completely forgotten civil rights, so I had to go back to civil rights advocate. We have to come together, right? I may think that somebody that comes down from Washington and calls themselves Patriot Prayer is a terrible person. Do I want to punch them or kill them? No, I don't, because that's called war, okay? And that's where I think some of our young people, some of our people in the streets fail, is they're not thinking about the ramifications of their actions that will only spur more violence. Violence begets violence. Hate begets hate. And so you can disagree with me. You can even totally dislike me for what I did, and I totally appreciate it, but nobody got hurt. The victim was a picture worth less than $100. So if that's the victim, and if I made a point about the morality of City Hall and about the morality of having a picture of a terrible, terrible perpetrator hanging directly across the lobby from where family members and community members sit, I really think that Ted violated community standards. And that's going to be my defense in court, is that that based upon what the state of Oregon did, based upon the articles in the Oregonian about from John Canzano about Brenda Tracy, who was a victim of a violent crime down at OSU, I think community standards dictate that we don't put child rapists up on the wall for public appreciation. And so my argument to the jury will be, if you think that it's right for that to be there and what I did was wrong, then send me to jail for his crimes of pedophilia, and I will do that. And if you think that community standards dictate that we shouldn't have pedophiles here and that there's accountability, then you can find me innocent. And, you know, if they send me to jail for his crimes, I think that's a message in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And so that's how much I believe in civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is about putting your body in the way. And people can disagree with you, but it's my body, right?
And so on the third, is that public?
That is public. Everything's public. This okay. is called trial readiness, and it will be public. And then I suppose we'll go to trial after that.
And would you like for people to come out and support you?
I love it. I love it. You can find me at Jeff Thomas Black on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Medium, all over the place.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate you coming here to KBOO to chat with us today.
Thank you both.
We're running out of show. This has been The Radio Activist. Thanks for listening. Incredible, incredible new host, Rochelle Dixon. Really looking forward to Rochelle causing a lot more trouble. And for real,
yeah.
This was kind of like one of those crunchy Democracy Now! Debates that stressed me out so much. But I'm glad we did this. So thanks, Jeff Thomas Black. Thanks to our engineer, Heather McCoy. Also, the KBOO volunteer coordinator is Ani Haynes. Radical inclusion is her game. Contact her to be a volunteer at this station. Volunteer at KBOO.FM. You could be behind this mic. We are radioactive. Stay tuned.
Spent most of my life in prison.
Criminal records can prevent individuals from moving forward with their lives, particularly with employment and housing. Tune in to Prison Pipeline on April 29th as we discuss how to get your criminal record expunged. That's Prison Pipeline, April 29th at 6:30 p.m.
Now I'm free. Now I'm free.